from West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
Support for the legislature today is provided by the following.
The West Virginia Higher Education Policy Commission, working with students and families to improve college access and student success for a better West Virginia. West Virginia University, online at wvu.edu.
Good evening, I'm Adria Lanham, and this is the Legislature Today at the Capitol Building in Charleston. It's difficult to convey the level of anger expressed in so many places by so many individuals here today regarding the teacher work stoppage and the legislative process addressing the issues of PEIA and teacher salaries. To help break down the events of this week leading up to a dramatic Friday here at the Capitol is Jake Zuckerman of the Charleston Gazette-Mail. Jake, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Yeah.
So, this has been a rather chaotic week, so let's start just by recapping some of the events that have happened so far. Let's start with Tuesday, or I don't even remember the days at this point, but the governor, he held a few town halls earlier this week around the state.
Sure. Well, yeah, starting, I think, Monday morning, right at 8:30, the governor started in Wheeling and was up in Martinsburg and Morgantown, if memory serves, and it seems like he took quite the shellacking from a lot of teachers, and he really just spanned the whole spectrum of different ideas. At one point, he said he was going to veto co-tenancy legislation and run some joint development bills, but those conversations were quickly railroaded and became teacher conversations. And Tuesday evening, he just had really a 180-degree about-face and said, "You guys, you know what? I think I've heard these teachers loud and clear." And he mentioned a 12-year-old boy who seems to have really cut through to him, and he said, "We got to give him more money." So what was once a 4% over 3-year teacher raise became 5% upfront for all teachers, school service personnel, and state troopers, and then 3% for public school employees. And that proposal has ricocheted around the Capitol in like 80 different forms since then.
And the day of the press conference was interesting too, because we had some of the union leaders come out, and then the press conference itself was kind of interesting as well. Just kind of talk about the atmosphere of that whole day.
Sure. Well, I think that was when the tides of all these teachers started to turn on the unions a little bit. And we didn't see Christine Campbell and Dale Lee and Joe White most of the day, and they were really huddled in the governor's office and just talking. And meanwhile, massive crowds were outside the House chamber and outside the Senate chamber and outside the governor's office, and everyone wanted to know what was going on. And they came out, and I think they expected a much more positive reaction. And instead, what came out from the teachers was, "We wanted a PEIA fix and we didn't get it." And despite the union leaders saying it's time to go back to work, 55 countywide, statewide strike continues.
That's right. And Wednesday was supposed to be a cooling off day as well, but it's Friday now, and of course school is still canceled. People are still here today as well.
I don't know who has cooled off. I have not found them or spoken with them yet. People are still very riled up. Negotiations seem to be ongoing, but now the bill's in this weird state of flux where the House has passed it with very minimal consideration. It came in the form of a strike and insert amendment, so almost a total replacement from the governor. The House received that, say, around noon on Thursday. Was that Thursday? Yeah, that was Wednesday.
So, yeah.
Wednesday. The days are all
very,
blurring together.
Very chaotic week.
So the House received that bill Wednesday and had passed it with about 7 hours worth of consideration. They had to get a supermajority to suspend constitutional rules that it be read on 3 separate days. The Senate has received it, and the Senate has really pumped the brakes on the whole operation, said, "We are not going to pass this $58 million pay raise bill, which doesn't even include the public employees' 3% raise, until we have evaluated it." The whole bill operates on this new revenue estimate from the governor that some find politically convenient for him, that fortunately these new estimates say we can afford this new bill that we couldn't afford yesterday. So the Senate seems like it's going to audit that figure a little bit, and meanwhile try to figure out whether or not the state can afford it. And Senate Finance Chairman Craig Blair has pumped the brakes further on this just about half an hour ago and said, That bill will not even be taken up this afternoon. It won't be seen until tomorrow. So we have a new school week approaching. No one knows what the Senate will do with this bill or when they will do it. And here we are.
And it's been kind of interesting, too, here in the Senate, because the minority party has requested to take it up for immediate consideration. Mm-hmm. They did that yesterday. And then today, senators made a motion to discharge the bill from committee because it wasn't on the agenda. Mm-hmm. So let's take a listen to what some of the senators had to say when that debate came up to discharge the bill from committee.
Great.
I worked the bill accordingly. I'm just concerned now that we're into 52 days of this session. We've got 8 days left. We're still not close to resolving this critical issue. Let's start school Monday and say that this Senate does support education in West Virginia.
So when I look at the Finance Committee agenda and we are looking at the budget bill, if we do not take up any revenue measure related to House Bill 4145, we are in essence saying that we are not going to do anything on that at this time, and it's not in our budget.
Point of inquiry, Mr. President, when will 4145 be discussed in finance?
That's not a point of inquiry.
It is a point of
it's
inquiry.
Not a point
I'm
of
asking
inquiry.
You a question. When will it be discussed in finance?
You're asking me to yield to a question. I'm not prepared to do that.
It's a point of inquiry.
It's not a point of inquiry, sir.
Well, if you don't want to answer it, I mean, I can understand why.
Well, we'll be having announcements later. Unfinished business.
So obviously a lot going on the Senate floor. It seems like it's been kind of tense here recently.
Oh, it's been very, very tense, especially on the Senate floor lately. The House, by moving as quickly as they did, really put all the process of deliberation onto the Senate and really just threw the ball over in their court, and all of a sudden everyone's looking at them now. And yeah, like you said earlier, the Senate Democrats are really just trying to get this bill out there and jam it out there, and Senate Republicans are really accusing them of playing the grandstands and trying to please the crowd more so than really look this over.
And I think it's important to mention today as well, because today has been one of those days where things have changed very quickly. This morning, I remember waking up, looking at the Finance Committee agenda, and this bill wasn't on the agenda. But that also changed here in the Senate session as well.
Correct. Yeah, this morning on the Senate Finance Committee agenda, there was the budget bill, which could include parts of PEIA, which has been a major X factor in all of this. But as we learned just half an hour ago and are still really processing here, that will not be considered today. So here we are in the interim.
Were you kind of surprised at the action that took place on the Senate floor today with them canceling the Finance Committee meeting?
Yeah, I was. Yeah, yeah, I was. I think it really took all of us. I mean, I remember hearing a mix of gasps and sighs from the grandstands and even from on the floor. And Tim Miley, the House Minority Leader, was out on the floor just before Senator Blair made his announcement. And I asked him if he knew what was going on. And it seems like everyone was really left in the lurch in this until the last minute. And now what I'm kind of wondering is how many of these teachers are going to be here on a Saturday? When are they going to be home with their kids? A lot of them have been here nonstop since last Thursday.
Did you hear any of the reaction outside of the Senate chamber from the teachers who were still here once that committee meeting was canceled?
I came straight from the Senate floor to this show, so no, I did
gotcha.
Not.
I completely understand. Now, meanwhile, while the Senate was going on upstairs, there were 45 superintendents downstairs waiting on Mitch Carmichael to address them. So let's take a listen to Senators Unger and Prezioso, who addressed them earlier today. Mm-hmm.
We've been foot pushing. We tried to discharge the committee. Actually, Senator Prezioso made the motion to discharge the committee to bring it down for a vote today. They played parliamentary procedure by saying they tabled his motion so people get confused about what's going on. But I'm going to tell you that anybody who voted to table his motion actually is voting to basically keep it captive in finance. So any green light up there today, you know the culprits, okay? Call them out and say, why are you having this thing captive in finance?
It's our indication that they're going up in finance, take the governor's revised budget estimate X amount of $1 million, put it into the general revenue, disperse it among all state employees, teachers, service personnel, state police, and give them an equal pay raise and make us vote on it. There's no agreement with the governor on this. There's no agreement with the House. And this thing is going to fall apart. There's no question about it. They're reluctant to work with the House. Even their own colleagues in the House are reluctant to do that. They're not working with the governor. So I'm sure that...
And they're not working with the Democrats in the Senate at all.
We don't know. The only thing we can do is play accordingly when they bring the bill out. Obviously, we're going to try to bring that budget bill out and do everything in there. The problem is going to be this. If you take that money and insert it into the budget bill, it's not in statute in the matrix for the state aid formula for teachers. So we're back here next year, not only with the teacher pay raise question, we're back in here looking for money again. So we're just, it seems to me they're delaying it, they're trying to divide and conquer, and everyone is going to have to hold tight on this. But we'd like to get it out of here this weekend, send you all you folks home, get school going next week, and we'll come back in here with this task force and look at PEIA and find a funding source. There's time to do that.
So I know you were on the Senate while all of this happened, but they did bring up an interesting point with this $58 million that was, they say, found, here recently by the governor. And, of course, the Senate majority and the Senate leadership in general have expressed the intention of dedicating that money to PEIA instead of this pay raise bill. Mm-hmm. Is that correct? What was your take on everything that happened with that?
Well, for one, we're talking about some money that people don't really know where it came from. I mean, it almost came out of thin air, and revenue adjustments do happen. They happen mid-session. I don't believe we've seen final numbers for February, but in January, West Virginia was about $28 million, if memory serves, in the black. And in speaking with the Senate president yesterday, he said the numbers are better and we're moving forward, but we're still $15 million in the red. I mean, in the red earlier, not in the black. So yes, we're moving in a positive direction, but it's unclear where this $58 million came from. And some of the sources that Governor Justice offered, ranging from a sports betting bill, President Trump's tax reform plan, and road bond construction, well, they're feasible. When you talk about the sports betting bill, that's contingent on a Supreme Court case that has not been decided on. If I'm not mistaken, the tax reform plan was actually budgeted for in the governor's presentation to the legislature of the budget in January. So I don't know if there's been more anticipated growth from that, and the road bond projects I couldn't speak to. But, I think some are weary of, I guess, on the principle that if something seems too good to be true, sometimes it is.
Yeah, and you're right. I mean, there's been a lot of skepticism with this $58 million. But do you think that the Senate Finance Committee is going to take up this pay raise bill at all? They didn't have it on the agenda today, and they've mentioned dedicating that money to PEIA instead.
Well, I did speak to the Senate Finance Chairman, Senator Blair, just before his big announcement, and he said he has a couple concerns that I don't think have really been processed anywhere else. For one, how will this pay raise bill affect pensions? He told me that there are 40 counties that have excess levies that are voted on at the county level to pay teachers. And the question is, how would that affect those groups? So I think that, a lot of these Republicans who at the end of the day ran as fiscal conservatives are processing this as fiscal conservatives would. And it's not necessarily at the expediency that some people would like, but they're trying to slow it down and make sure that, no decisions are made hastily here.
So just talking with some of the teachers around the Capitol, what are some of the biggest concerns that you're hearing so far?
Well, a lot of the reason people get into working in state government is for the benefit structure. And from what we're hearing, people's premiums are going up. It's like they're in a private insurance market. And sometimes, even in the wages that are built into the budget, they are not actually outweighing their premium increases. So they're actually losing salary increases to cost of living, interest, hiking premiums. So they want to see some of their real income back.
And of course, Justice had talked about this PEIA task force, and he had issued an executive order on that. So what's the update as far as this task force goes?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he issued the executive order, which I think was designed to satisfy a lot of the teachers. I think there's a trust issue between some of the teachers and the governor. And in an attempt to bridge that gap, the governor issued an executive order that said, we are going to form this task force to find a fix to PEIA. You know, health insurance is this complex behemoth of a policy area. You can't just fix it in a couple days. And if memory serves, there are some appointees of the governor's, there are some union representatives, there are some legislative members, there are some teachers on there, and it's going to be a group of all stakeholders designed to take that money and figure out a better insurance plan for the state.
I think it was you who had mentioned an interesting point the other day, too, about the membership and the ratio of Republicans to Democrats. Is that correct?
Yeah, as far as the legislative members go, there are two Republicans to every Democrat on there, which speaks for itself. I suppose it's you'll make friends with one party and you'll lose friends with another. That's a choice for the governor.
Do you know the rationale behind why that was the case?
I do not.
And I know, too, you had mentioned on Twitter that there wasn't anybody from PEIA on that task force, was there?
There was no one from the Public Employees Union, which, as one reader noted, that there are about 1,000 members statewide. Although, to be fair, the executive order leaves room for the governor to appoint, I think it's 7 people who are just whomever he feels fit. So Public Employees Union could get on there, but when you compare that to some of the other unions, like the NEA, American Federation for Teachers, et cetera, those are statutorily required in the executive order.
Now, a lot of the remarks in both the House and Senate can get kind of interesting, and I understand that Senator Unger had some interesting things to say on the Senate floor today.
Yeah, well, during the remarks from the members, and I had really just seen from Twitter that there were a lot of superintendents waiting to speak to the Senate president downstairs, who was presiding over the Senate, and remarks from the members come last. And Senator Unger asked to make some remarks and picked up a copy of Dr. Seuss's classic Horton Hears a Who and was reading from it on the Senate floor. I've been told it's Dr. Seuss Day. I cannot independently confirm that, but he gave a live performance of Horton Hears a Who from the Senate floor. Well, I don't know if it was a form of a filibuster or honoring the late Dr. Seuss. You tell me.
I believe you are right about Dr. Seuss Day. I think I remember seeing something about that on my daughter's daycare page, just as an aside to that. But let's talk about some of the other issues that have come up this week. I know that you guys have been pursuing this a lot, the story about justices' absence from the Capitol.
Right, yeah, you know, it's kind of been the worst kept secret around the Capitol. Where's Governor Jim Justice? And if you remember last year during the special budget sessions, the guy was everywhere. I mean, he was the wheeler and dealer, and when no one could find a solution, not that it was necessarily successful all the time, but Governor Justice's appearance, I mean, you could feel his presence here. He was giving speeches on the floor. He was giving press conferences. He was performing some of his divisive stunts that, like or hate him, they're there, and you know they're there. Meanwhile, people haven't really seen him much, and the Charleston Gazette Mail has tried to get a hold of his calendars to see where he's been, and he's declined to release those. And, you know, sometimes in holding back records, you actually make a bigger story than just releasing them. And it's kind of been the talk. And he started showing up a little bit, especially with some of the national media attention we've seen as a result of this work stoppage. But yeah, we've seen him intermittently throughout the week. He was there for the press conference Tuesday. He was not present Wednesday. He was seen Thursday and was almost instantly mobbed by different members in red shirts and black shirts and all the union people here who are protesting. I haven't seen him here today. I could not say authoritatively where he is, but yeah, where's the governor?
That's a good question as well. Well, so let's talk about some of the other issues that have, I mean, we've been very consumed. Like I said, it's been very chaotic here with all the other things going on. But one of the bills that I believe passed the House today was the sports betting bill. So let's take a listen to some of the debate that happened on the floor earlier today on that.
Great.
It regulates a currently unregulated market. It'll improve the competitive market for our gaming facilities. Most of all, I think this will drive traffic into the state. It'll increase revenue for our local economies as well as the state.
We have to wager over $3 billion before the first dollar gets put into PEIA, correct?
Under certain assumptions, that's correct.
Okay, and just limited to West Virginia, not Vegas or the
world
or the country. How much has to be gambled in West Virginia, or how much is expected to be gambled in West Virginia in the out years? And I'm not going to hold you to it. I just don't know what the projections are.
Yeah, and nor do we.
This is a no-brainer. How often do we have pieces of legislation that raises revenue without raising taxes on West Virginians? We talk about raising revenue all the time. We fail to really do it that well. And this is an opportunity to raise revenue, not on the backs of West Virginians, but mostly on the backs of out-of-staters who are going to come into West Virginia.
And this idea that Vegas has the corner market on this, you know, that really bothers me. Vegas, Sin City, is that what we want?
Maryland will require a constitutional amendment to do this. Virginia's not really looking at this. Ohio's talked about it, and Pennsylvania's taxed themselves out of this. So West Virginia is actually in a very unique position for once, where we could actually be a leader in our region instead of a follower.
The Constitution does not afford for any type of form of gambling expansion. Now, the legislature did call casino games and everything else a lottery. Doesn't make it right. Doesn't mean that this is a lottery. Doesn't mean sports betting is a lottery. The lottery is what the voters in 1984 authorized.
So as you said earlier, I believe this depends on a decision from the U.S. Supreme Court. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
This does include, I should say that this is one of the measures that the legislature has passed that does dedicate some funding for PEIA, but there are several others as well.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to me about some of the other measures that looks to dedicate some funding to PEIA.
Right. Well, there's a laundry list of them. I hope I don't miss them. But so there's the sports betting bill. In the co-tenancy, I believe it's the landowners who could not be located, though are
yes.
still entitled to royalty payments. That money goes to PEIA. There was actually a failed amendment on the medical marijuana bill that would have sent about $5 million to the PEIA stabilization fund. It's kind of the trendy legislative thing to do, if you will, of just chucking spare money to PEIA instead of typical places like general revenue or the rainy day fund.
And we also have that bill with the surplus, like any surplus that would go to PEIA as well. But you had mentioned the medical marijuana bill, and that is something that I admit has slipped my radar. So tell me a little bit about that and what happened with that this week.
Yeah, well, there's a lot going on. But it was last week, the Medical Cannabis Advisory Board, which was the board the legislature set up last year to set up some rules and the lay of the land for medical marijuana in the state, which starts in July of next year. They gave some recommendations for the legislature, some changes that they wanted to see. And among them, there were more dispensaries, letting businesses act as any combination of growers, processors, and dispensaries, increasing some of the standards to be able to dispense medical cannabis. A few others, but the big ticket item was allowing the sale of dry leaf marijuana, so the smokable form, although they did not say smokable form. And that last hot button amendment was not included in what the House passed, but the House did expand the permits for growers, processors, etc., and also let patients pre-register for marijuana. Now the thing to watch is going to be, now that that's over to the Senate, Senator Richard Ojeda has actually already introduced a bill that has entirely stalled. That would do. It would include the dry leaf aspect, and it would allow people who are certified to use medical marijuana to grow plants in their house. Some of those measures are going to be trickier to pass in the House. The question will be, is he going to risk putting those on there and tanking the bill, or does he think that the actual drive is there and the legislature will go for it? You know, if you look at the House, Speaker Armstead voted against that, which is, he is the head of the Republican caucus, so that's always an ominous sign.
Right, and that'll be an interesting thing to follow as well. Mm-hmm. Now, one other thing that happened earlier today is this teacher march that happened outside the Capitol. Let's take a listen to some of the events that happened earlier today with that.
Great.
I'm from Sherman, and I'm one of two people who started the march. Juliana started the march.
We hope to accomplish showing the legislators that it's not just the teachers that are concerned. It is the public, it's the community, and the students, and the parents. Everyone is supporting the teachers.
I think it means everything. When I think about what West Virginia is all about, this is it. For the students to take this initiative and spend their days off of school not sleeping in or watching Netflix, but to work really hard and make sure their teachers know that they support them. It means a lot.
So Jake, we only have about a minute left. Just tell me your final thoughts on this week and whether you think that schools are going to be closed Monday as well.
Well, I am not in any position to speculate what's happened Monday, as I've been wrong about everything else this week, so I'm going to leave that out. But the thing to note is that, you know, it's about 4:30 p.m. right now. Most of this news of this week has not broken before 7 p.m. and some nights as late as 10 p.m. So there's a chance that till I wake up tomorrow morning, I'll have no idea what's going on. And the legislature is set to meet Saturday and possibly even Sunday, so anything could really change anything right now. So I'm just going to leave that to people who are paid more than I am.
Right. It's definitely been a chaotic week, that is for sure. Again, we have Jake Zuckerman with the Charleston Gazette-Mail. Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thanks for having me.
This concludes West Virginia Public Broadcasting's seventh full week of the Legislature Today from the Capitol Building in Charleston. With only 1 week remaining in the regular session, we hope you'll join us next week every evening at 6 for our wrap-up of legislative activity. I'm Andrea Lanham for West Virginia Public Broadcasting. Thanks for watching and have a great weekend. Bye.